Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, normally I would say good afternoon first and foremost to the lady in the room, and that would be Sue Thomas, but then I was notified, like, literally 3 minutes ago that Sue's not here today. How did I miss this, you guys?
It was a text we got over the weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
Ethan, you saw that text? You can verify it?
I can verify that I did see the text.
All right. I thought maybe she was just running late. So Sue's not going to be here, ladies and gentlemen. The host didn't know that, but that's okay. She's got important things to do. How's everyone else? Fred, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Have a good weekend?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, lots of sports.
We were communicating a little bit on baseball and then hockey. That hockey game Saturday night, I can't remember what you said. Did you make it through it or not?
I did.
We'll talk about that in a second. Ethan, yeah. How are you?
I'm doing well. Crazy weekend of sports.
You have to do Sue's News today, so I know that you are doubly busy, and we appreciate that. Well, Sue will be back tomorrow. I guess she had just something she had to take care of today, which the only reason I'm bummed about that, well, first of all, we'd love to have her here, but I wanted to talk about the dedication in Grafton for the D-Day Memorial, the National Memorial of Ascent, Military Ascent, and she was there. I watched a little of it. You know, they live-streamed it the other day, Fred.
Yeah, right.
And there were a bunch of people out there. She even snuck, you know, remember she said she might go to the baseball game because there were events in the morning and then there was like a dinner, and she did make it to Busch Stadium, too.
Yeah, she was there for some of that
And then
as well.
Saturday's game was so confusing to me because I'm watching it and then, as I remember it, and I'm just, the other thing I'm going to tell you right now is it's almost like I'm missing a day of the weekend because I'm forgetting and I'm, you know, things are melding together in strange ways. But anyway, I thought I saw Riley O'Brien walk in the tying run on Saturday.
Initially, you did.
Right. But then I looked away and I'm like, and I was mad and I'm in my basement doing stuff. Next thing I do, I look ahead like 2 minutes later and they're celebrating the victory. I'm like, wait a second, what? And I had texted our friend Joe Arnold, you know, Jennings and I and Joe Arnold have a string. And I may or may not have said when the winning run or when the tying run was walked in, I said FFS. And Joe thought something had happened that he hadn't seen yet because, you know, sometimes there's delays and stuff like that. So he calls me right away after the win. He goes, I didn't know what you were talking about. I'm like, well, I thought they had tied it up. But look, they did what they had to do. And I think somebody said, what was it, the Cardinals being good this weekend or was the Reds just completely sucking? I mean, they're pitching. Frank texted me Friday night because remember he had said on Friday afternoon that the starting pitching for the Reds is somewhat suspect, although they hung in there.
Starting pitching wasn't the problem.
No, it wasn't the problem,
was it?
It
was the bullpen.
That's right.
Put them in such a bad spot, and the Cardinals took advantage of it.
Now, we've had some. Did we even have roster moves today? I think Victor Scott went down.
The move will occur tomorrow, but it got announced last night that he did not make the trip to Queens for the series that will start tomorrow against the Mets. The belief, while once again not official yet, is that Nathan Church will be reinstated from the injured list and he will be your starting center fielder.
Right. So going back to the hockey game on Saturday night, I've really gotten into this series. Part of it is because my friends in Vegas are season ticket holders. So even one of the nights I was out there, there was a game. They skipped the game to go to the No Doubt show with me at Sphere. But I mean, that game Saturday, Fred, was just nuts.
You can have a 4-0 lead in the third period.
4-0. And then in three, and this is another one of those things. Sometimes what I do, because I was watching the game by myself, Becky and Alexa were upstairs, a lot of times I'll sit with my headphones on, right? And I'll listen to music and I'm watching the game. And that's what I was doing. And I was picking out songs and it was 4-1. Okay. And then I just picked out a couple songs to listen to, and I look at the TV, and it's 4-3. I'm like, what in the world happened? Then they end up tying it. It goes to double overtime. Rick and Dan, my friends, they gave up. They couldn't take the second overtime. They're like, this is just too much.
They go to a restaurant.
They were there. They stayed until the second overtime. But then they went and got something to eat on the strip and said they went home.
I want to have that kind of money
someday. I know. Well, I mean, look, you know what? I'm going to tell you right now that in my friend who has the season tickets, his company is located in Dallas, and he's there today, and he's going to be there tomorrow. So he can't go to the game tomorrow. So they sold the tickets for tomorrow. But look, you can't tell me that the Hurricanes are out of this either. That was a big win for Vegas. They really needed that after blowing the one the other night. But this is a hell of a Stanley Cup. I'm just telling you. And this is coming from a guy who doesn't really pay much attention to hockey. It's just not my thing, but it's been really, really exciting to watch, you know, the last couple of weeks.
The NBA is just, Friday night's game was incredible.
I mean,
as well.
Can the Knicks, what have they won now? 13 or 12 in a row?
They have won 14 in a row now, right? They haven't lost a game in the playoffs, have they?
No.
So yeah, that would be 14. Right.
Check that. How many games? I'm checking your math because I'm not good at math.
Don't you play four? Do you play four series also, right?
How many games have the Knicks won in
Great
a row?
Radio.
I know it is, but we want to make sure we get 13. See, we're wrong. It's 13.
So they have lost then in the playoffs at least once. Because it's four games each series.
I'm gonna take your word for it.
Still, what they are doing is absolutely unbelievable. And I have zero interest in the NBA, but I am very intrigued to see what this New York crowd looks like if they continue winning. New York City might just collapse because these fans outside of the arena have been so crazy for these two games. Have you seen any of the videos and pictures of the security that they are going through to be able to get into the arena tonight?
No, but I mean,
it's TSA level. I mean, it is crazy.
You've got a cut with the New York City Police Commissioner, Jessica Tisch, talking about the watch party outside Madison Square Garden has been canceled for tonight because of security reasons.
And what is that labeled, Fred?
NBA.
Okay, here it is, here.
Because of that visit, and in coordination with the United States Secret Service, there will unfortunately be no watch party outside of Madison Square Garden for Game 3 of the finals, and no access to the immediate vicinity of MSG without an authorized reason to be there. And the mayor will be hosting a watch party nearby at Bryant Park, and MSG will be hosting two watch parties, one at Woolman Rink in Central Park and one at Brooklyn Bowl. For Game 4, we do expect watch parties outside of Madison Square Garden to resume.
I thought I had something from The View, the ladies on The View on that topic too, but I can't find it anymore. No, I didn't have that?
No.
Maybe that was something I saw on Twitter, because there were a couple of people that were actually defending Trump. Look, there is a strong feeling by even people, it's interesting right now, people who even like Trump or support Trump are saying this is a selfish thing for him to do because it's putting all these other fans into this trouble and they have to go through that security and they can't have the rally, etc. I mean, I kind of understand that. I actually understand both points here because, look, it's not like he is just a rando and he's going, you know, to Oklahoma City because the finals there. He's a Knicks fan. He knows a lot about basketball and sports. So I don't know. I have mixed feelings on that. But then again, he is inconveniencing thousands of other people as well. But I mean, some of these tickets, like the courtside tickets, are just going for crazy. You'll see who Ben Stiller down there and Spike Lee and all those guys
will be there tonight,
right?
Yep.
Timothy Chalamet is a big NBA guy.
Huge. He's at the last 2 years. He's been
every
single playoff game. He flew out with Ben Stiller to San Antonio. They were at both of the games. So yeah, he and Kylie Jenner, they're dating. So they've been at all the
games. I was asking Fred about this because I didn't know if there was some sort of protocol with the celebrities where, okay, we go to our home games, but we kind of leave the opposing venues off the list. But that's not true. They're just not probably courtside, right?
I think that I want to say that maybe Chalamet was courtside for those, but he is a diehard fan. He is a huge fan.
And wouldn't be a guy that I would have guessed as a sports fan at all.
He's a huge Knicks fan. So
interesting.
I don't know for sure if he was courtside for those, but he did travel and he's been at all of the games. Let me just say this. I am very thankful to be a St. Louis sports fan because we have such a small city, when we're attending our athletic events, that you don't have the demand of millions of people wanting to attend. These tickets for these playoff games for the Knicks, I mean, if you lived in New York and you were just my life, my job, I'd have zero chance of ever being able to attend because it'd be thousands of dollars to attend a typical playoff game that I could pay $200 to go and see a second round Blues.
But what's the flip side? The flip side is you have, and I read about some guy, and my friend's sort of in this situation in Vegas right now. Look, you are a big fan of this team, but you realize you can make $10,000 or something like that on a pair of tickets. I mean, that's kind of hard when you think about the whole scheme of things. Well, what Rick said is like, I've already seen him win a Stanley Cup, so he's thinking about it. But then yesterday, after the Knights won on Saturday, now he's talking about going to Game 6. You know, so he's vacillating back and forth.
We might watch another cup.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens. I'll check out the game. I didn't think the game the other night was that great, unfortunately. I'll watch a little bit because we have no Cardinals tonight, right? And we have no hockey tonight. They get two full days off, and they're back at it tomorrow. We got a full show today, even though I am finding out late to the game that Sue Thomas is not here. She'll be back tomorrow. Ethan's going to fill in on Sue's news. Our friend Josh Hammer will be back with us. We usually talk to him every couple of weeks. He's back from Israel. And, of course, you hear his show every Saturday at 1 p.m. on 97.1 FM Talk. John Lott will be here. He's got some really interesting gun safety numbers. John's an expert on that. He's been a guest on the show for literally decades. You know, I thought of Tiffany Justice last week, Fred, because remember the Moms for Liberty sat down in that 60 Minutes interview, and they were interviewed by Scott Pelley, and they were roughed up by Scott Pelley, and it was completely... I mean, for people out there that are acting like Scott Pelley is not a biased 60 Minutes reporter, it's just laughable. But that's a perfect example. And Tiffany Justice, who was one of those who was interviewed and was the victim of journalistic malpractice, I will say, will be here. Cusimano's going to have all kinds of stuff to talk about because the Cardinals swept. You got the NBA, Stanley Cup Finals. The Battlehawks lost last night. I just couldn't get into it, Fred. I was telling Fred this. I'm the biggest NFL fan, and the whole Battlehawks thing does nothing for me. And then this dude that wins over at Worldwide Technology Raceway, Joseph Newgarden.
Right.
He's won six times there?
Yeah, it's his sixth win.
Kind of owns that place. John Ziegler will be here. This is going to be interesting tonight at 5 because Zig was very very emphatic a couple of weeks ago that Spencer Pratt, this whole thing was manufactured by the media. He's not going to win. I mean, he certainly didn't think he would win if he ended up in the runoff, but he's not surprised at all because if you haven't caught up on that news, the third place finisher from last week, who wasn't the third place finisher because they can't count votes in California, has now surpassed Spencer Pratt. And it looks like that she's going to end up second against Karen Bass. So in other words, there's no hope for LA, right? Ethan, are we sure where we're going for traffic here? Boom. Trent's filling in. We'll be back with Josh Hammer.
Lemonade. Fresh squeeze lemonade. Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, mine starts here.
Well, we're supposed to be in a ceasefire. Is there really a ceasefire? What happened over the weekend with Israel and Hezbollah? Here's Bibi Netanyahu.
Currently, the fire on this front is held because after we struck the terror regime in Tehran, it ceased attacking us. Should the terror regime make the mistake of attacking us again, we will respond with force because Israel has the full right to self-defense and we will exercise it as much as necessary.
Okay, usually we don't have a translator. We apparently have a translator there. Josh Hammer's back with us, Newsweek senior editor-at-large. I believe you are just back from Israel as well. How are you this afternoon?
Mark, I'm doing great. Yeah, I landed in South Florida yesterday, probably about 4 hours-ish before the missiles started flying. So pretty good timing, if I don't say so myself.
So what was this trip about? You've been obviously, even recently, what were you going there for in particular? Anything?
Yeah, so I was actually co-leading a trip for a wonderful organization called Passages, which is a great organization that essentially takes young American Christians to Israel to show them the Holy Land and just to kind of foster better Jewish-Christian relations, U.S.-Israel relations, all the things that I'm passionate about. And I was helping to lead this trip of young Christian conservative journalists in particular. They wanted a more senior journalistic mentor-like figure. I'm not sure how senior I am, but it's all relative, I suppose. And it was a lot of fun.
That's good. Cool. All right. So what was the climate like in Israel, considering where we are right now? And I'm not even sure where we are right now with some of this. And I think there's been some even questions over the weekend. But what was the climate like? Was it different than the last time you were there?
Well, the last time I was there, you may recall, was last June during the first war, the so-called 12-day war. And I ended up evacuating. It took 3.5 days with our six-month-old baby at the time. We went to Jordan, Cyprus.
That's
it was
right. I do remember that. Yeah.
It was quite a mess, to be honest with you. So this trip was considerably more uneventful, with one exception, which was this past Monday evening into Tuesday morning. We were staying at a hotel on the Sea of Galilee in the Israeli north. And there were sirens, and everyone ran to the bomb shelter in the middle of the night, probably around 2 a.m. or so, because Hezbollah was firing at the time in northern Israel. So that was the one disruption on this trip. Other than that, it was considerably more peaceful. But again, I got out just before the missiles started flying yesterday. In fact, Mark, I will tell you this, which is the young journalists, the young folks who I was there helping to lead, apparently they were asking some of the other trip leaders after I left. They said, did Josh have any inside information? And that's why he got out while we're still in the bomb shelter here. So that was happening yesterday. For the record, no inside information. Just got lucky with the timing on that one.
So I think it was a week ago, and they've kind of both confirmed that this conversation happened, but President Trump spoke with Prime Minister Netanyahu in I think the word crazy, and maybe an F-bomb was dropped there in Trump describing some of the things that, you know, were happening between Israel and Lebanon in particular. How would you interpret the nature of that phone call and kind of the fallout in the aftermath?
Well, it's not great. I think would be a very diplomatic way to say it. Look, it was not that long ago that the United States and Israel were shoulder to shoulder in lockstep going against Iran. And I remember two and a half, three months ago, those weekly, biweekly Pentagon pressers where you had Pete Hegseth and Dan Raisin Kane talk about how this is the greatest alliance ever. You have the first greatest Air Force, the second greatest Air Force tag teaming to destroy a mutual foe. It really was not that long ago. And I'm not entirely sure what's changed, to be honest with you, because we've been going back and forth now with this ceasefire for 2 months. It's been 2 months mm-hmm. since the June 8th ceasefire. We gave it our best shot. We sent J.D. Vance halfway around the world to Pakistan. He was flying to ISI by Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner. We tried to negotiate with the Iranians, holding aside that we don't even know who's supposed to represent the regime at this point. We thought we were negotiating with them. And we can't get a deal. And we can't get a deal for a very simple reason, Mark, which is that you're not dealing with rational, calculating figures. You're dealing with apocalyptic 72 virgin in heaven Islamists who are trying to immunize the eschaton with the coming of the 12th imam and all the various nuances of Shiite eschatology. So it's a tough situation. I understand Trump's frustration there, but Israel is not the correct recipient of the president's wrath. I think that the president, if I had to guess here, is frustrated by rising oil prices. He's probably frustrated by decreasing popularity for the war efforts. He's probably worried about the midterms. But the solution, Mark, in my estimation, would have been not to go down this prolonged back and forth ceasefire, not a ceasefire rabbit hole. The preferred solution would have been just to finish the job quickly.
Yeah,
to go in guns blazing and pull off the Band-Aid ASAP.
Well, even in the situation from the weekend, because we know that Iran fires, you know, weapons. They say it's a warning shot and in a, you know, ramp it up if Israel responds. But it's one of those situations where Trump is basically yelling at Bibi and telling Israel to calm down. He also has the same warning for Iran. But I really can't believe that the guy that did what he did last summer and the guy who did what he did to start this war with Iran isn't going to respond and say, wait, that's not a ceasefire when you're firing missiles. But he must, deep down, he still must feel that they're on the cusp of some deal, which I just find to be not plausible.
So this was one of my concerns with Trump way, way, way back in the day. I actually wrote a blog post about this during the 2016 primary, if memory serves, which is my concern was that the guy who wrote The Art of the Deal might tend to exalt the deal at all costs rather than the substance of the deal. And what I try to explain in my show, The Josh Hammer Show, which obviously is heard right here on the weekends, very grateful for that. What I say in my show all the time, Mark, is that a deal is not an end unto itself. A deal is a possible means to an end, a possible means. But the way that statesmanship, the way that diplomacy, the way that international relations, the way that this all has to work, and frankly, domestic politics too. When you are engaged in statesmanship and political leadership, you define your end goals, and then you work backwards to calibrate the means to get to your goal. But the goal here all along, to me at least, was pretty clear. You're trying to end the threat from Iran, the ballistic missile threat, the nuclear threat, the terror proxy financing threat, etc. That's the goal. Then the question is, what means can get us there? This current dynamic, which I hate to say is somewhat reminiscent of the Barack Obama era, is just reeking of desperation for a deal. So it's the exaltation of a certain means over the end itself. But again, we should be focused on the end here, not the means. And I have to say that I thought Trump understood this. I really did. I mean, he pulled out of Barack Obama's nuclear deal. He killed Qasem Soleimani. He launched a big fury, took out Khamenei. I mean, there's so much there. There's just so much there. And then inexplicably, the past 2 months, it's just turned on its head. And now, at a bare minimum, Mr. President, if the United States is not going to finish this job, at least let our allies try to finish it on our behalf. Sure, that's not asking a whole
lot. It's more than a little confusing. I will admit that. Josh Hammer back with us. Let me ask you about, because this was the big story. I was gleeful last week when they fired Scott Pelley. I'm not under any kind of impression that things are going to dramatically turn around at CBS News, but his whiny little fit in the aftermath of his dismissal is just hilarious. He knew what was going to happen. He got what he wanted, and now he's a martyr. But, you know, after all of this, the folks at CBS and the people defending the legacy media, they still do not understand why the American people lost trust in them. And it's really quite something.
No, they have no idea. And the Scott Pelley New York Times interview is just utterly delectable. Truly. I mean, how Scott Pelley can earnestly look at his interviewer and say, oh, wow, we're representing America. I mean, I remember when 60 Minutes was sued by Trump because in October 2024, they had the deceptively edited interview of cackling Kamala Harris, where she had this Hall of Fame gobbledygook word salad, a word salad extraordinaire, you might say, and they edited it out to make her sound remotely coherent when, in fact, she was not. And Trump sued. And by the way, the result of that lawsuit was a $16 million settlement from CBS News to help fund the future Trump presidential library. That was less than 2 years ago. So the notion that CBS News does not have a history of carrying water for one partisan team here.
Oh, it's outrageous.
It's absolutely outrageous.
But this is my favorite line from the New York Times. He goes, and there's a subtle political bias that I've never seen at 60 Minutes or at CBS News before. Has he ever watched his own show or his network? I mean, for him to say that with a straight face is utterly ridiculous. I have example after example. I have a very primary example from something that Bill Whitaker did here to my city of St. Louis. But he gets to go out and he gets to be the martyr. And the other thing here is the way that Barry Weiss is being, you know, portrayed as this MAGA warrior, which, again, is nothing.
Right.
Could be further from the truth. And they think that, I guess they think folks like us want everything to turn into right-wing media. No, we're just asking for a little fairness. Maybe just a little fairness. Right, Josh?
Yeah, look, I mean, I know Barry a little bit. She is not a right-winger. She is a disaffected liberal, an anti-woke liberal, someone who's a liberal who's been mugged by reality, you might say there.
Yeah.
But she's no one's idea of a right-winger. And the fact that she has gotten the meltdown that she's gotten from the newsroom really says all you need to know, au contraire to Scott Pelley, says all you need to know about the CBS News newsroom. But one thing that I think is interesting, Mark, is that it's actually not just CBS. There's a very, very slow movement in some outlets, not the New York Times, not NBC News and Kristen Welker, but some outlets actually in the mainstream press are trying to be a little bit more fair. So the Washington Post, for instance, which for decades was one of the preeminent liberal publications in America, to be clear, they're still left of center, but their op-ed page,
well, I've seen it. I've
in a
seen
very
a
interesting direction.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They have a new right-of-center op-ed editor. They've got a lot of conservative op-eds up there. Now, look, my weekly syndicated column is actually now run by the Los Angeles Times. The Los Angeles Times has a right-of-center owner as well. That's the West Coast's biggest newspaper. So there's interesting things happening in the legacy media landscape. It's not happening everywhere, but Barry Weiss and CBS News are kind of the tip of the spear right now because, frankly, if you can't take Barry Weiss, then you definitely can't take someone like myself. So Godspeed to Barry. I wish Barry nothing but the best there. I think she's doing great work so far.
I subscribe to both of those publications, and I read them on a daily basis. And I have noticed a trend in the LA Times and the Washington Post. Really, the Washington Post has been more because the LA Times has been trending just a little bit more fair. At one point, they had hired my friend Scott Jennings to do some opinion pieces for the LA Times, right. But I never saw that really manifest itself. But yeah, slow incremental changes, and you know, maybe we'll get a little bit more fair reporting. Josh, always great to have you on. I'm glad you're back safely from Israel. We'll talk soon.
God bless.
All right, we'll see you.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
And I was actually thinking about safety from a downtown perspective in a different way last week because I had baseball tickets and my daughter and our neighbor Amanda. They were here at the station. Some of you might remember this on Tuesday, and then we zipped over. Luckily, in that particular case, I had a parking pass, which I don't always have. Now, I probably, you know, in past years, and I will not do this probably ever again, but I would walk because I'm cheap. I'd walk from where we are here at 14th and Olive to Busch Stadium. It's really only like a 10-minute walk, but it's not safe. And I do not conceal and carry. Maybe I shouldn't mention that. I've thought about it. Certainly in that particular situation, I wish I would, but I would not be allowed in the stadium with a weapon. I do have pepper spray that I have with me sometimes as well. But what's interesting is more and more people are concealing and carrying, or at least carrying. And John Lott is back with us this afternoon with some stats that are very interesting when it comes to crime and how, you know, more people who are legally carrying guns might have an effect on that. He's the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. John Lott, welcome back. How are you this afternoon?
Doing great. Great to talk to you again. Thanks for having me on.
So what are we finding here, John, that we are having an effect? We got a lot of people, and maybe even I'm finding that I get a lot of women that inquire and are very interested in conceal and carry for safety reasons. So what does your new research show you here?
Right. Well, for the last 15 years or so, we've been looking at the number of people who have concealed carry permits. But as with Missouri and 28 other states, a lot of them have, in the last few years in particular, moved to constitutional carry, where it's not even necessary for people to have a permit. In fact, you have about 34% of the U.S. population just since 2021 has been covered by these constitutional carry laws. And so what we've started to do over the last few years is to have a survey just to find out, you know, because we just can't look at the number of permits to see who's able to carry, just to try to get an idea of who's carrying. And what we find is that just in the last couple of years, there's been about a 5 percentage point increase in the rate that general election voters are carrying. Now, it's kind of amazing to me, but you find that about almost 30% of general election voters are carrying at least some of the time. About 13.2% are carrying either all the time or most of the time. You have another 16.6%, which are carrying at least sometimes or rarely. And when you kind of get into the numbers, there's a lot of interesting differences there. You find, for example, that Blacks and Hispanics are disproportionately carrying frequently. Blacks make about 11% of the general election voters, but they make up over 15% of those who carry all or most of the time. Hispanics also make about 16% of general election voters, but they make up over 18% of those who carry all or most of the time. You also see, if you break it down by the political views of the people, one of the things that I found most amazing was that, well, as a whole, Democrats don't carry too often. If you look at very liberal individuals, they carry at the highest rate most all or most of the time. And that the second group are the people who are most very conservative. And it's kind of everybody in the middle carries at lower rates. So I was kind of surprised to see that those who classify themselves as very liberal are the ones who are carrying at the highest rate.
Why would that? What would the reason for that be? That is fascinating.
I don't know. That's something we haven't gone into, but you're not the first one to wonder about that.
So
I wish the earlier surveys we had broken it down like that, because it'd be just interesting to see whether this is just something, you know, the Trump era, whether something like that has changed.
So then how does...
And you mentioned women earlier. What we found is that women were virtually as likely as men to carry most or all the time, which I found interesting. And I think this is important because if my research convinces me of anything, it's the most vulnerable people in society, basically poor Blacks who live in high-crime urban areas, and people who are relatively weaker physically, like women, who benefit the most from having the options to be able to go and protect themselves. One of the things that we saw was that women in constitutional carry states are actually carrying at significantly higher rates relative to men than they are in the right to carry states. And, you know, one of the benefits of constitutional carry is that if a woman starts being stalked or threatened, if you have to go through a permitting process, it could take 60 days or 90 days, and some places in the country even take a year to go through the process. A woman may not be able to wait even 60 days to be able to go and get the permit to be able to go and carry. She may need to do so
that's
right
a good
away
point. Yep.
For protection.
You know what's interesting here is when you dig into this, you also find, because John, you know, I've been around these debates for a long time, as you have with conceal and carry. Right. We used to have permitting here, but the complaint that was always made by the left is this is going to turn it into the Wild West. I'm like, what are you talking about? The people that are legally owning firearms, they're not shooting one another. I go hunting every year right. with tens of thousands of people. We have rifles in the woods. We don't shoot each other. But are you actually right. finding with the evidence of more people carrying that violent crime rates are going down, and you think there's a correlation?
Yeah, no, we've put together data over many years. So you find that as the percentage of the population with concealed carry permits goes up, you see greater drops in violent crime. And as states adopt constitutional carry laws, you see even bigger drops that occur in violent crime. And one of the things that's important also is who's able to carry when you move to constitutional carry. And look, neighboring Illinois, I'll just give an example. If you compare Illinois and Indiana, in Illinois, about 4% of the adult population has a concealed carry permit. In Indiana, it's 23%. Why the difference between those two? Well, in Illinois, it costs about $450 to go through the whole process to go and get a concealed carry permit. In Indiana, it's literally zero to be able to do it. They don't even charge you for the background check. And the thing is, it's not just the number of people who get permits, but also the composition of people who get permits. In Illinois, it's basically wealthy, well-to-do individuals who live in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. Now, you can have 100% of people in an area where there's zero crime or low crime carrying. You're not going to have much of an impact on crime. You need to have it so that the very people who are the most likely victims of violent crime are the ones who are going to be able to go and defend themselves. In Indiana, not only do you have 23% of the adult population with a concealed carry permit, but what you find is that it's very heavy and heavily minority, low-income zip codes. That's where the crime was occurring before, and that's where you need to have people to be able to go and defend themselves. And what you find is that when you've moved to constitutional carry, you see a lot more relatively poor people, a lot more people who have who are minorities who are able to go and carry. Because, you know, even if it's $80 or $100 to go and get a permit, you know, unlike all the costs that you have in Illinois that's there, you know, that can stop some people from being able to go and legally carry when they have to get a permit to do so.
Yeah, I didn't know that was the price point there. John Lott is with us this afternoon. One of the people that you quote in the study is a guy from the University of Georgia who researches crime. David Mustard is his name. And another guy, the county sheriff, Gordon Smith of Georgia, and he goes, look, the data is clear. The vast majority of concealed carriers are among our most responsible residents, not the problem, which is exactly the opposite of what the, you know, complaints of all always been in fighting conceal and carry, which is interesting. Well, I mean, it's not interesting to me or you because we kind of knew that, right?
Right. No, I mean, this is something we've known for a long time. When you look at concealed carry permit holders, you can see the rate that they lose their permits. You can see the rate that they're convicted of crimes, and you can compare it to other groups. So, for example, concealed carry permit holders are convicted of firearms-related crimes at 1/12 the rate that police officers are convicted of firearms related crimes. And police are very rarely convicted of firearms related crimes, only about 1/20 the rate of the general population. And you know, those firearm related crimes for permit holders include things like accidentally carrying a gun into a gun free zone. And
right.
So it's
right.
not necessarily even, you know, kind of, you know, something bad happened with it. So, you know, it's really amazing the low rate that they have any types of problems.
John Lott, who is the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. Always great to have you back, John. Thanks for joining me on this Monday.
Well, thanks for being there.
All right, take care. I gotta take a break here because I'm like it's against a break, but I do want to talk about something. And I was unaware of this until I came in this afternoon. But there is a Sky Zone where, you know, the kids have fun, and my daughter goes there all the time in Shrewsbury. And last night there was essentially, I don't want to say riot, but there was maybe a mini riot with hundreds of kids that showed up for an event that was to honor 6-7, because it's 6-7 day. 6-7 is something that the kids say. They don't say it quite as much as they did 6 months ago, because that's when I had to ban it in my home and my daughter was saying it that much. But the details of this thing in Shrewsbury are more than a little troubling. I'll have them next. When I start talking about this next story, I want to point something out, because I think one thing that's interesting about it is there is zero coverage in our local paper, and there should be coverage. Now, maybe they're going to do a story, okay? I don't know if they're going to do a story. If they're not going to do a story, we'll find out. I think it's certainly something that deserves coverage. And this one's a little personal for me, because my daughter goes to this Sky Zone. You know, it's kind of like a trampoline thing. The kids go there. Our neighbor, who kind of hangs with Alexa, who's 17 years old, takes her there with some friends sometimes. So that's why this, news release from the Shrewsbury Police Department really caught my attention. I want to thank Lieutenant Todd Malusian, who sent this out. He responded to a couple of questions that I had, and he listens sometimes, so I do appreciate that. But here's what the news release said, and people need to know this. And by the way, when I Googled this, because I wanted to find out if the Post had covered this yet. And again, in fairness, the part of the story is perhaps still being covered, and maybe they will. Something tells me that they won't. But there are a couple other stories from local television stations from last year, from 25 or from 24, where maybe something similar to this happened, where the Sky Zone oversold an event and there were packs of kids that showed up. But anyway, this is what happened yesterday, and this is what the news release says from the Shrewsbury Police Department. On Sunday, June 7th, at approximately 3:42 p.m., this is in the middle of the afternoon. I mean, this is where my daughter would go at some time in the afternoon. Now, maybe weekend's a little different, but listen to the details. Shrewsbury police were dispatched to Sky Zone, located at 7375 Watson Road, in reference to a disturbance involving a large number of juveniles. Upon arrival, officers learned that Sky Zone was hosting a 6-7 event and had not arranged for additional security despite the anticipated large crowd. With the business already full, there were approximately 300 to 350 unaccompanied juveniles waiting in line outside. With temperatures around 90 degrees, it did not take long for tempers to flare. Approximately 8 fights broke out in a matter of minutes. As officers arrived, the crowd scattered in all directions. We requested assistance from other agencies due to the size and the volatility of the crowd. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon in Shrewsbury, okay? The disturbance extended to nearby businesses, including Aldi, Walmart, and My Place, where juveniles entered the stores, caused damage, threatened customers and employees. As a result, most surrounding businesses were forced to close for the day. I actually think I have here. This is the Walmart in Shrewsbury near Sky Zone, and this is what was happening. In the late afternoon, right? All right, so the news release says, as officers attempted to gain control of the crowd, the juveniles, ages 10 to 17, turned their aggression toward the officers and began yelling obscenities, making threats, throwing rocks, and refusing to leave the area. Let me guarantee you, ladies and gentlemen, just in case you're wondering, if my daughter was there with her friend Amanda and other friends yesterday, I have no doubt that the response that they would have had to police officers getting involved is they would have thrown a couple of F-bombs toward those cops. They would have made threats. They would have threw rocks at the cops. They would have refused to leave the area, right? Of course they would have. Now, one of the questions I asked Lieutenant Malusian, and I understand why he can't answer this, but we're going to answer it for you, the audience, and you've already asked it, you've already answered it yourself, but we're going to do it anyway. These were not 3 to 350 kids from, let's say, Baldwin or Kirkwood nearby. I don't think so. I'm just taking a guess here, okay? So several juveniles were detained, this is the news release, and subsequently released to their parents' guardians. A butcher knife. This is perhaps my favorite. This is my favorite part of the story right here. And she didn't come from Baldwin. She didn't come from Wildwood. She didn't come from Fenton. She came from Florissant. A butcher knife was seized from a 12-year-old who said she Ubered to the area after she saw the fights on social media and wanted to be involved. So she brought the weapon with her for, quote, protection. a 12-year-old? Here's a valid question. I mean, I don't know the answer. Maybe some of you can help me out with this. Can a 12-year-old jump in an Uber if they have a debit card? Maybe they can. I don't know. I can Google this or ask AI. But the 12-year-old kid jumps in an Uber and goes, what, 25 miles, 20 miles to get to Shrewsbury? And she's, you know, amping up for a fight at 12 years old? Unreal. The crowd gradually dispersed. The area was cleared by approximately 9:30 p.m. No officers were injured. No injuries were reported by the others. The Shrewsbury Police Department thanks all other police agencies who responded to our call for aid. We're extremely grateful for your assistance. Well, look, none of this is on the Shrewsbury Police Department. This is on Sky Zone for doing something and not anticipating the crowd and maybe having some private security. But this is a culture issue, ladies and gentlemen. This is not something that the police can fix. It's not something that Sky Zone can fix. And apparently it's not something that the parents of these kids can fix, because I can promise you, what would be the reaction of you, ladies and gentlemen, if you found out that your kids were involved in something like this and they started storming through an Aldi and a Walmart, screaming, threatening, throwing rocks at police? My daughter would be so severely punished that she wouldn't have any of her summer left, because she'd be grounded for 2 months. Most responsible parents would have a reaction to that. They wouldn't blame the business. They wouldn't blame the police. They would blame themselves for not parenting, right? So where are all these parents? And how do all these kids get there? I mean, it's kind of frightening when you think about it. And again, this is not something that occurred at 10 or 10:30 at night. These were a pack of kids at 4 in the afternoon trying to get into a trampoline park with weapons and decided to just take over the whole shopping center that's involved there where Sky Zone is. It's unreal. Now, I don't know if there were some arrests. I don't think the news release indicates any arrests that were made. Hopefully there were some, but my God. I mean, this makes me feel like I can't safely have my daughter go to that Sky Zone. Why would I have a different opinion based on what happened yesterday? So that's frightening, and it's unfortunate. It's also mysterious why our local newspaper cannot do a damn story. Do they not have the resources to throw something together? I just did it here, and I've known about it for 90 minutes, okay? They have a news release out there. Do a damn story, Post-Dispatch. Put it up there. Oh, but you might have to identify the race of the kids, right? Because you do that sometimes, and that's going to be uncomfortable for you, isn't it?
Get more at 971talk.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.